Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Our mission is to bring you great interviews with preppers from around the world so you can be better informed and better prepared for everything from a hurricane to the end of the world as we know it. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
Welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Today's guest is one that I've been very anxious to speak with for quite some time. Mark Goodwin is the author of the recently released The Days of Noah, Book 1, Conspiracy, and The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution. In addition, Mark has authored The Economic Collapse Chronicles, a three-book series on the challenges people face during an economic meltdown. And you can find Mark on the internet at www.prepperrecon.com, where you'll find his podcast show archives and many other helpful resources. Mark, welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Pastor Mike, thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be on.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing. And I've got to tell you, Mark, your books are fantastic. My wife, Kathy, has read the first two and can't wait for the third one to come out in the Noah series. And we do have a bookstore at church, and we've been stocking these books. And as fast as they're put on the shelf, they're purchased, and people are reading them, and the comments are pretty much the same from everybody. It's like, I thought these were supposed to be fiction. And I think it's fair to describe them. And this is not original with me, of course, but I heard someone refer to your books in this way. They called it prepper fiction. And of course, I like to add, well, really it's truth disguised within a fictional narrative. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so. And I think that, you know, when we read the headlines, you know, you look at the headlines, you've got a Drudge Report or wherever, and you look at all of the things and you say, man, that stuff would make a good fiction story, right?
That's
because
right.
It just doesn't sound real.
That's right.
So it's not much of a stretch to just take the headlines and weave them into a post-apocalyptic story, because, I mean, when you look around, it's a pretty dystopian landscape. Yes. that we're existing in right now, isn't it?
It certainly is. Yeah, it certainly is. I think maybe that's your books are a perfect example that we can point to say that's probably where that phrase "truth is stranger than fiction" comes from, because it does a great job of opening people's eyes. So the first question I've got for you, Mark, and one that I think our listeners have too, is how did you get started on these kinds of books? What piqued your interest and desire to write books like this, like the Noah Chronicles?
Well, I guess it probably, if I was going to trace it all the way back, I'd probably have to go all the way back to, you know, my childhood years. I grew up in Kentucky. Both of my grandparents had farms. You know, spent a lot of time in the summers on the farms, and they kind of had this, you know, somewhat self-sufficient lifestyle. They both came through the Depression, both sets of my grandparents. My grandmother, you know, she made sorghum molasses, and she had barter networks and everything else back during the Depression. So, you know, she's kind of been through all of this stuff, and because they've been through it, they lived a very, very different type of lifestyle. And then
yes.
I was in Boy Scouts as a young man, and you know, be prepared was the motto. And of course, then you
yes.
grow up and you get out, and you kind of do your own thing and all that stuff sort of falls to the back of your mind. But then when 9/11 came along, all that stuff sort of came back to my mind. And while I didn't really know what a prepper was at that time, you know, I kind of got on the ball and started thinking about, you know, what if this gets worse? And what if this is a complete, you know, a really turns into a bad mess? You know, what kind of things do I need to do? So, you know, I sort of got into that stock up mode and get ready and for whatever may come, and then sort of got lulled back to sleep. Then in 2008, I think that scared me more than 9/11, the economic collapse that we had in 2008, because 9/11, while I really didn't understand it as well as I thought I did, because I thought, you know, it was what George Bush told me, you know, they hate me because I'm free. It didn't make a whole lot of sense at the time. And as I continued to educate myself more and more later, you know, it turns out that, you know, while they may be an evil bunch of people, we were certainly poking the beehive a lot. So, you know, there may have been some blowback elements to that as well as them just being plain old mean. But the economic aspect, because I didn't understand it, that really, really worried me and really bothered me. And the more I read about it and understood how close we came to an absolute, complete, total meltdown, the more I wanted to know so I could understand it a little bit better and figure out how to prepare for something like that. And started reading books, and I went and got my degree in accounting, and studied economics quite a bit and in college, and then also on my own, because the stuff they teach you in college is very, very different than what you'll get if you just determine in your mind that you're going to learn about it yourself. So as I started following that, you know, I started understanding that everything that happened in 2008 and everything we've done to fix it has not fixed it, and we've actually exacerbated the problem even further. So whatever mess we could have faced in 2008 had we not been pulled back from the brink of the cliff there, all that energy is now stored up. And the next time we have a crisis, it's going to be that much worse than whatever was going to happen in 2008. And one of the things that I wanted to do was just help people wake up to that. And that's the reason I started the Prepper Recon podcast. And I wanted to help people prepare for it. And shortly after starting the podcast, I was sitting in church one day, and the pastor looks out and I, at the time, I was attending a mega church, so there were like 3,800 people in that sanctuary besides myself. So when he said, "Somebody out there's got a book rolling around in their head and they need to go home and write it," you know, me and my wife, we looked at each other, because I'd mentioned to her that, you know, I'd thought about writing a fiction book, but this was something I was going to do when I was old and gray and had nothing else to do but sit around on the rocking chair and write a book, right? Because I didn't think anything would ever come of it. And I thought, you know, what if that word was for me? So I went home that day and I started, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to play chicken with God here, and I'm going to go ahead and do it and be faithful with it and see what comes of it. And I did. And I'm really, really humbled to hear, you know, you say that you're stocking it in your bookstore and that it's flying off the shelf. That's very, very humbling for me.
Yeah. They're great books. So you then in 2008, you woke up and you didn't go back to sleep, in effect.
No. Haven't been back to sleep since.
Yeah. And because and the reason I say that is because I remember both in 2001 and in 2008, when these things happened, especially 2001, the church was filled for 2-3 Sundays. And I know that this was a common experience across many churches in America, that the churches were filled for the first few weeks after that. And then slowly it started ebbing again, and people kind of went back to their lives and what I like to describe as going back to sleep. Same thing in 2008. And so that seems to be a common malady that we have in America. But you stayed awake and you decided you were going to do something about it. And so that Sunday, you were encouraged to pursue that idea that that God had given you to start writing. Was that the Economic Collapse Chronicles?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And there are three of those. Can you briefly describe those, Mark?
Yeah, the very first one is called American Exit Strategy, and it basically it follows three different plot lines. There's two major ones. One is a couple that's in South Florida when the crisis hits, and it becomes evident that they're not going to be able to stay in a major population center. So they do what they can. They liquidate their real estate, their home, and take what they can out of that. And they go buy a small farm up in the hills of Kentucky to be close to family and do what they can to survive what they see coming. And then the other major plot line in there is a third party presidential candidate. He had ran as a Republican, couldn't get any traction that way, didn't get the nomination, but decided that he wasn't going to just drop out of the race. And so he gets in there and he fights against the Democrat candidate and the neocon Republican candidate as an independent. And his name is Paul Randall. So, and he's got some very different ideas from what you would get from if you thought Fox News was what a Republican was supposed to be, and you thought that maybe it was something a little bit more like what our founders had in mind of a Republican, like a sort of a Thomas Jefferson type ideas for what a Republican is, And the election is basically, he doesn't get it, and he's, but it's sort of fishy the way everything goes in the election, and from there you get a lot of political turmoil that's going on in D.C. at the same time that you've got all of this chaos going in the streets, and it basically looks like what we just saw in Greece, where you know there's no money in the ATMs. The grocery shelves are stripped bare, and when people start getting desperate, they do desperate things, and the cities just become absolutely unlivable because there's just not enough resources, and what little resources are there, people are just doing anything that's necessary to get a hold of them, and the more violent they are is tends to be the people that are getting along in the cities, and they're just operating under as predators.
Yeah, which we know is not fiction. That is true to human nature.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today. Whether it's a grid down situation or just a temporary power outage from a storm, a sun oven will allow you to harness the power of the sun. Not only will you conserve resources, you'll maintain operational security by not sending up smoke. You can cook or dehydrate just about anything, including bread, muffins, roasts, jerky, beans, rice, and so much more. Go to sunoven.com/prepperrecon for an $80 discount off a deluxe package.
How did you come up with the idea, or what was the inspiration then to go from the Economic Collapse Chronicles, these three books, into the Days of Noah series?
Well, I guess a lot of the research that I did for the Economic Collapse Chronicles, it sort of gets you in this rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And you just start getting further and further down in the rabbit hole, and you start finding out more and more stuff that you wish you didn't know.
And you just need more people to tell about it,
right?
Yeah,
and you start getting all these questions in your mind, like, you know, 9/11. How did, building one, a plane hit it, and that's why it fell down. Okay, building two, a plane hit it, and that's why it fell down. Now, building seven was a 50-something story building, 47, I think maybe it's 47 story building, built to the same specs that those towers were, and And supposedly some fire fell from one of the twin towers and started an office fire in there, and it pancaked down into its own footprint at free fall speed from basically a fire in the trash can. And so there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't add up. And there was all of this gold being stored in vaults beneath the towers that miraculously made it out. And there's just all of this fishy stuff all the way around that entire story. And while I don't know what the answer is, I do try to get folks thinking in the days of Noah Book One Conspiracy about, you know, what did happen, you know, and I don't want to tell them what happened. I want to get them thinking so they can get in there and start investigating it themselves. And then you've got this entire coalition of architects and engineers, and they're called A&E for 9/11 Truth, and they've got a YouTube channel, and they've made some documentaries and things. But it's just hundreds of architects and engineers that say, no way, steel won't melt at the heat that you get from a jet engine fire, which they say most of it burned off, and they just say that none of that stuff that happened on that day could happen. So so then we're left wondering why, and if something like that was perpetrated, you know, why was it perpetrated? And then that just really leads you down a big rabbit trail of all these other questions that I try to bring up in the book. And rather than give people the answer and tell them what to think, I try to just, whet their curiosity so that they'll get in there and start examining that stuff themselves.
Yes. Yes, plenty of examples, plenty of real life organizations figures that are introduced in the story and in the plot line. So I want to encourage our listeners to, if you don't have the books already, The Days of Noah, Book One, Conspiracy, and The Days of Noah, Book Two, Persecution, you need to get your hands on those books and read them with an open mind. And I think that you'll be rudely awakened if you're one that's been asleep through these last 15, 20 years or so. So what makes these books so interesting to me and to others, Mark, that I know who have read them, is that the backdrop really does read like the front page off of the local newspapers. And so I'd like to discuss some of those things with you. I know that that you're up on what's going on in these areas. I've listened to many of your podcasts on Prepper Recon, and so I thought maybe we would delve into some of these things to give our listeners some examples of what we're talking about. Real life facts, they can check these for themselves. Information is out there, and I thought we would start with the New Asian Bank. That's we're hearing all of the conversation and discussion surrounding China's effort to raise up this new central bank, which I'll let you tell us what are they attempting to do through this.
Well, without actually knowing exactly what their long-term plans are, I would suspect that it's a move to try to shift power from west to east. And then obviously they've made several comments about the need to de-dollarize the world, and so I think that there's a play to try to do that. And as they reduce the demand for the dollar, as they start to, and I believe that they'll be very successful in what they're trying to do, to break away from the old Bretton Woods system, which was where the dollar was the reserve currency for the world. And if China wants to buy oil from Russia, typically they would take their yuan, trade it for dollars, and then buy the oil in dollars, and then Russia would take the dollars and go and convert those back to rubles. So rather than doing that, they're saying, why do we do this? And it's a big question in a lot of countries' minds, and they don't really understand why they're still doing this, because at the time that Bretton Woods was put into place, the dollar was gold-backed. Yes. And of course, now that's not the case at all anymore.
Right. So, now, some of our listeners may not be familiar with how all that came around in the first place. I mean, why in the world would OPEC or any of the Middle Eastern oil-producing nations designate that the dollar is what they will accept as currency for oil? How did that happen?
Well, after the default of the Bretton Woods agreement, which Bretton Woods came into being after World War II, and the victor countries sat down and decided that's how it was going to be for the world. We basically would say, you know, for every dollar that you have, you know, we'll, at any time you can cash that in for a dollar's worth of gold. And gold was set at $35 the ounce. At some point in the late 60s, Charles de Gaulle, who was the president of France, figured out, he did some real short math like we could today, and said, you know what, I think they're abusing this global reserve currency system, and I think that they're printing more dollars than there is gold to back it up. And so he started cashing in all of France's dollars for gold to bring their gold back to France. Well, this caused a run, and it became very, very evident that we weren't going to have the gold to pay that off. So Nixon closed the gold window, and we basically defaulted. And that's when we started to see the hyperinflation of the 70s. So Henry Kissinger, who belongs to a lot of sort of nefarious groups like the Bilderberg Group, Trilateral Commission, and Council on Foreign Relations, arranged a deal with the Saudis for what was essentially an oil-backed dollar. Through that, we promised the Saudis military backing, even though if you're a Christian in Saudi Arabia, you've got a really good chance of losing your head or being in prison for the rest of your life. If you're a woman in Saudi Arabia, you're not allowed to drive a car or do a lot of the other things that we would like to think women should be able to do. They're very, very oppressed there. Christians are very, very oppressed in that country. Yet we prop them up militarily, and they're a friend, while we get a lot of other people around the world that if they behaved like that, they would quickly be labeled as dictators. So it's really, it has a lot to do with, you know, what our interest is as to what type of label you're going to get. From our administration. But anyway, the deal was for Saudi to, you know, convince OPEC to change to trade oil for dollars, and that's been going on for ever since the 70s, since Kissinger set that deal up, which we often will call the petrodollar. And and that's starting to fall by the wayside. And if it actually goes away, I suppose that we'll just have a lead-backed dollar, because we do still have we do still have a lot of big guns. So smaller countries, we can sort of intimidate them into just going along with our dictated policies.
Yeah, and I think some would even go so far as to say, Mark, that the United States has already weaponized the dollar. As you well know, a lot of the dictators and leaders of other nations that have lost power and even lost their lives in the last decade, the United States was heavily involved in bringing that to pass. Back to the Asian bank, this creates an interesting dilemma for China, because they hold a tremendous amount of U.S. debt, don't they?
Well, about $1 trillion, little more. And that would be a terrible thing for them to lose. And I don't think it's something they want to see gradually happen. I mean, something they want to see happen overnight. I think it's something they would like to gradually do. But I think that if push comes to shove, I don't think that they would have any problem weaponizing the dollar in their favor, by dumping that $1 trillion worth of currency. And if they see that there's a run and other holders of U.S. debt are also dumping their currency, I think that they'll want to try to be the first to the draw. You know, everybody wants to hit the exit when somebody yells fire in the theater. So I don't think they'd be any different in that situation. And I think that they're just trying to set up, and I think they see the inevitable much more so than the American public.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they're trying to get out of dollars as quietly and as calmly as they possibly can without yelling fire.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mentioned a run on the banks. Let's talk about Greece and the situation that's going on over there. How does this present a picture of the current economic problems that are just below the surface here in America?
It's pretty much exactly the same thing. Greece probably doesn't have, they probably don't have a $1 trillion military budget. But
yes.
But right. You know, as far as the welfare state, they've done exactly the same things we're doing. The trouble we're having in Puerto Rico right now is based on pensions, which is exactly like the issue they're having in Greece, and they want to keep borrowing money and they don't want to pay it back, and they don't see why they should have to pay it back. They don't understand why they should have to take a haircut on benefits like pensions and things like that. It just doesn't make sense to them, because their socialist communist government have been telling the people for years that this is the way this works. You just keep borrowing and you never pay it back, and that's okay. And and you know, the alarm bells have been sounding for years and years and years. Well, someday you're going to hit the edge of the cliff and you're going to go over, and you know, and everything goes bad when there's no currency, there's no groceries on the shelves, and there's no police, and there's no services, and there's nothing else except chaos and misery. And they just didn't want to hear it. Well, and I'm very, very surprised that it took this long for the things to deteriorate to the point they are in Greece. But it was a mathematical certainty that was what was going to happen. And I'm very, very surprised that it hasn't hit our shores yet. But it's also, just like Greece, a mathematical certainty that we're going to experience the same thing that they're experiencing. And we can hold it off a little bit longer because of the military and our ability to push our weight around through hegemony, through dictating to other countries that they're going to continue to take the dollar so that we can continue to print it. You know, Greece, they're on the euro, so they can't devalue their currency to pay their debts off by debasing their own money like we can. But at some point that jig's going to be up as well. And we're going to have to go through exactly what they're going through.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little later in the show we'll discuss some of the things that folks can be doing right now to prepare for that inevitable situation, because I agree with you wholeheartedly, Mark. We may be able to postpone it a little while, but it's going to hit the shores here pretty soon. So that raises the issue of a so-called global financial reset. Are you hearing any rumblings about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially concerning this fall, we've got a lot of folks from the prophetic sector that are really concerned about the September or Jonathan Cahn, you know, he's not setting any dates. He's not telling us what he thinks is going to happen this September. He's just saying, every 7 years, according to the Bible, and there's a year of debt forgiveness, and it's called the Shemitah, and for a godly nation that can be a blessing, and for an ungodly nation it can be a curse. And you know, up until recently, America had the highest Jewish population on the earth, and so, you know, a lot of things just sort of holds true for America that held true for Israel without getting into I don't necessarily subscribe to replacement theology, but there's just some general principles, and he points out that you know, every 7 years we have a Shemitah, and 7 years ago on the Shemitah, the stock market dropped 7%. We lost 777 points, and that was in 2008, September of 2008, and that marked the beginning of the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
7 years prior to that, on the Shemitah, was 9/11. And of course, when the stock market reopened after 9/11, we lost 7% of the market in a single day. And of course, there was the, you know, our nation has never been the same since that. You know, right. we can't even get into what we lost monetarily,
right,
from 9/11 compared to what we've lost in the way of freedom from the abuse of the surveillance state and what we have to go through being treated like criminals in our own country every time we get on a plane, and all of our emails and phone calls and Skype recordings like we're talking on right now are being filtered through the NSA, and we're all criminals until proven innocent. So right. What we've lost in the wake of 9/11 is just it just doesn't even compare to the freedom to what we've lost in the way of our way of life and freedom compared to the money. It's much bigger.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's been described, the United States, not just the economic system that we're under or operating today, but also the way that the society relates, citizens relates to its government. I've read it described as sort of a welfare-warfare relationship, a welfare-warfare economy. And what I mean by that is it is the intention of this government, and I don't mean this current administration, this I'm talking about the U.S. government that's been going on for many, many decades, but it is their intention to keep a critical mass of citizens distracted, so to speak, and concerned about what I would describe as frivolous things, many of them on government assistance, and I'm not belittling those who are on government assistance out of necessity, but I am challenging those who are on government assistance because they're too lazy to work, and so these citizens will give a rubber stamp approval to any kind of behavior that our government decides they want to engage in, as long as the checks keep coming every month. And lately, the last couple of years, our government has been very active in pulling down other governments around the world. Now, this may come as a surprise to some of our listeners, Mark. But the so-called Arab Spring and some of these other so-called populist revolts and rebellions, every one of them were staged, and it's my personal belief that every one of them were funded by the United States government through back channels and the CIA. I'm not asking you to comment on that, but I bring that up to say that we have a lot of critical issues facing our nation today, but none are more dangerous than what you were talking about just a moment ago, the loss of privacy, the loss of liberty, and the loss of our freedom. We are living in a surveillance state today.
Yeah, and to just briefly comment on that, Saddam and Gaddafi both wanted to start trading oil and gold.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it was just coincidental or not, they're both dead. And on a side note, the CEO of Total, which is France's largest oil company. He also questioned why we were trading oil in dollars. And about a year after he made that comment, he had a very, very unfortunate plane accident, hit a snowplow in Russia, you know, because there's a lot of times they've got snowplows just sitting around on the runway when you, when you taxi in. And you know, it's just unfortunate. But yes,
just for our listeners, I'm talking with Mark Goodwin from Prepper Recon, and we're hitting a lot of different touch points in this conversation, and I just want to encourage our listeners, go check this stuff out for yourself. It's the same thing I tell folks. Many of my listeners already know I'm a pastor, and some of these things I talk about from the pulpit on a somewhat regular basis, and I challenge people, listen, you don't have to believe a word that I say, because the evidence is out there. Go check it out. You can fact check everything I say. Go check the evidence, and what you'll find out is I'm right. So moving on then, how about the real estate market? The news is that it's recovering, that housing prices are starting to improve, things are looking pretty rosy. But those in the know, those that have, that follow all the trends and the indicators, they're saying something completely different, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I want to make sure that I answered your last question too, because I kind of shot off on a rabbit trail there and didn't get to comment on the welfare and warfare economy. But you know, we're watching that right now. Greece's welfare system, it's going to take a haircut despite their vote against austerity, because there's no more money. And so are ours. Our foreign policy is going to change, regardless of who we put in office. You know, whether we get another, even if we get another Bush in there, who would love to keep the warfare machine going, and all of his backers and everybody over on K Street that's helping to fund the Bush campaign this time. They would love to keep that going, but it's going to change because the money's going to run out, and the welfare system, it's going to change because the money's going to run out. And I don't want to, I always want to make sure that I'm differentiating between the people that just absolutely can't, that absolutely will not work, and they won't contribute, and they milk the system. And I want to make sure I differentiate between those people and the folks that are on Social Security, which wasn't the greatest idea, but you know what? They paid into that system their entire life.
That's right.
And so if that's you, if you're on Social Security and you're getting a check, I'm not talking about you, because you earned that. You paid that money in. The same thing for the men and women that have served in our armed forces, and you're retired from the armed forces, or you were disabled in battle and you're getting a check. You earned that. And we're very grateful for your service.
We're in agreement.
And we're not talking about you. But but we've just got this huge class of people that that just milk the system, and they're gonna jeopardize it for all of the other folks that we just talked about, the folks that paid into the system, and the folks that serve their countries, and there's not going to be money there for them either, because of these people that are milking it, and because of the $1 trillion worth of money that we're spending on military budget every year. A large part of that is on the budget. I think about $600 billion on the budget, but then you've got about another $400 billion that's a black box spending that nobody knows where it goes. It just kind it just kind of like poof, disappears. And while the Federal Reserve can continue to print that money out of nowhere, the value has to come from somewhere. That $1 trillion, that it has to be exchanged for some value to purchase those goods and services that we're consuming in the military. So it doesn't just come from the magic unicorn. The money, the nominal value may, but the nominal dollar amount may, but the value has to be extracted from somewhere. And a nightmare, and it's beyond fixing. And the only thing we can do at this point is brace for impact. And that doesn't mean you give up in the election process. I'd rather have somebody like Rand Paul at the helm when we go over the cliff than a Bush or a Clinton or a Sanders. Somebody like Bernie Sanders would seize the opportunity of eclipse and take us straight into a Mao or Stalin type communism, complete mm-hmm. with death camps for Christians and dissenters, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah, absolutely right. Yep, I agree.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots, that's the end of the first half of my guest appearance on Soaring Eagles Radio with Dr. Mike Spaulding. Tune in next week for the rest of the show. God bless and happy prepping.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback or audio edition at Amazon.com today.